Good morning, Colorado. This is KGU Community Radio Public Affair. I am your host, Tish Buford, and we have in studio today Mr. Larry Ambrose, a Denver community activist. Thank you for joining us. We're glad to have you.
Well, thank you for having me here.
We're going to be talking about regentrification that's happening in the Denver community and the unintended consequences of the impact on the citizens of the neighborhoods that are being affected by this. So please sit back and enjoy the next half hour with us as we discuss this very vital and important issue with our special guest, Larry Ambrose, who's in studio with us today. Now, Larry, you are a pretty educated guy. I was looking at your background. You studied at CU and the University of Denver. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your academic background and how you got involved in activism?
Well, I went to the University of Colorado Boulder. Then I went to graduate school in California at UCLA. I got my master's degree in arts administration. Actually the first graduate in business and the arts from their master's program, I think, in the country. I went back to law school when I was 48 years old to get my law degree. I guess I got involved in activism because my father was responsible for saving the historic district in Pueblo back in the 1960s when urban renewal came in. He fought to keep them from tearing down the entire neighborhood of Union Avenue, which is now a historic district. They were going to come in and put in a industrial park. He actually was responsible for bringing urban renewal and kind of thought that would be a good thing, but it ended up that they wanted to just tear down all the old historic buildings. So he fought that and won. I guess that was my inspiration to begin with.
And it sounds like a very passionate inspiration. Now, the areas of regentrification that we have been focusing on has been our Park Hill neighborhoods, the West Side, and of course, Five Points. And most recently, there was an establishment that was boldly advertising regentrification of the Five Points community, which set off quite a bit of controversy in the Denver media and in the community. And this was in relation to Ink Coffee. Can you speak on that?
Well, sure. And I think gentrification in Denver is citywide. I think it's become quite obvious in those areas which are starting to develop now, where we do have neighborhoods that are vulnerable. But I live in the Sloan's Lake area, and that started gentrifying maybe 2010, 2011, with the advent of the new Sloan's, which was the St. Anthony's development, a massive 25-acre development right in the middle of the city. There was a significant displacement of people in that area. And I think we're between Mile High Stadium and the lake, which is where I live, most of the houses there have been scraped. And you have these slot homes that have come in, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 homes, six to a lot, people living like kind of like sardines. I mean, I don't know how people can actually live that way. So that happened over the last 5 or 6 years, but it's citywide, and it's a terrible thing, but it's something that actually started, I believe, in the 1980s. With the administration of Federico Peña, we had an opportunity to create an open space in the Central Platte Valley. And at that point, the emphasis changed from concentrating on public improvements and creating a city, which his slogan, of course, was Imagine a Great City, to development. Large-scale, highly dense development. The Central Platte Valley was rezoned for up to 25 stories right next to the river. And you can see the results of that zoning today in the Central Platte Valley. And so it's kind of crept out. And I would maintain that this pro-growth, pro-development orientation is responsible for the gentrification, and it's going to even get worse as we go along, because there's no discernment in regard to how zoning is going to affect people who are living in the city today.
Absolutely. And do you think that is because the priority of money and future income and the construction industry with the local government is superseding those needs?
It's almost like we're flying by the seat of our pants. I call us blow in my ear Denver.
Okay,
blow in my ear. You can get whatever you want. It's
a little political pillow talk, right?
It's just a pro-growth. This council and other and previous councils have not stopped to discern what the unintended consequences are and what the intended consequences, even the intended consequences. In 2010, we passed a new zoning code in Denver. We had rezoned the entire city. Of course, the city maintained that this was a very inclusive process. 99% of the people in Denver knew nothing about what was happening to their own property. And there were parts of Denver that were massively rezoned. You know, our master plan calls for areas of, it's called Blueprint Denver, has areas of stability and areas of change. There were areas of stability that have changed so much that the word stability becomes meaningless. And areas of change become almost infinite. There's never been a study that was done prior to a rezoning to say, okay, we're bringing in this density, we're bringing in all these people. What are the ramifications? How much new open space do we need? How many people are going to be displaced? How many, you know, what is the gentrification? How many people today have already had to leave the city? We don't know that number.
Wow. And, you know, and it sounds like the rezoning and planning just had kind of a generic blanket thought process. And there was no delineation between, okay, what we actually need and how can we prevent people from being displaced? And how come both cannot, you know, exist concurrently with each other? You know, so I would think that the local government would say, okay, we need to rezone, remodify some areas through moderate construction. Why not involve the citizens of that community or that neighborhood in that process? Why do you think that's not happening?
Well, it is happening. They are involving the citizens. It's just that it's an empty process.
After the fact.
No, they involve us before the fact,
okay,
to some degree.
Okay,
after
we'll explain.
The decisions have been made, but before the zoning is actually put in place.
Gotcha.
And in some cases, we've actually said, okay, here's what we want, and they actually codify it. They actually put it into law, and then they ignore it. In fact, we have a case before the Supreme Court right now over the St. Anthony's development. What the city maintains is that, okay, so we did say this. We said that this is what the zoning should be or the way the development should look. But in fact, city council can do whatever they want. It doesn't matter what the community says anymore. I don't know why we even participate in these processes anymore, because the city can change it at any time, and our work, our years of work sometimes, is totally meaningless.
Right, and that's to clarify, that's what I meant. So, you know, you're an audience to the legislation that is affecting your neighborhood, so you're there as a public audience, and you're being provided the information, but you have no participation in what happens to the outcome. It's predetermined, even though you're in the room, but you don't have a real voice, even though you guys are there in mass. It doesn't sound like you guys have a legitimate or valid portion in the litigation process before this is finalized.
Well, I mean, in effect, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what's happening. You know, I listened to Councilman Albus Brooks's interview on Colorado Public Radio, and he didn't mention the word zoning once. He talked about, oh, we have to bring the state, local, and federal government. This isn't a problem we can solve. I think his solution was the community needs to get together and wave goodbye to all the people who are leaving town. That's about all that we can do.
Okay.
Zoning wasn't even mentioned. Well, he and his council and his mayor are the people who are actually putting this zoning in place. This is what is the base route, the density. Right now, he has a proposal for a new downtown at 38th and Blake, immediately adjacent to the Cole neighborhood, Whittier, and Globeville. He's calling for what this zoning calls for is anywhere from 8 to 12 to 16 stories. Okay? This scale of development, it's a new downtown, is going to have huge ramifications and going to gentrify, without question, if we look at what's happened around town, the areas all around this new development. Yet they have done absolutely no studies to say, okay, this is what the impact is going to be. Now, what he says is we're going to have affordable housing incentives as part of this zoning. You can go from 8 stories to 16 if you build affordable housing. This is his solution. He touts this in his interview about we've got these programs for affordable housing. 3,000 homes. Well, 3,000 homes most likely is a drop in the bucket compared to what the need is today. So he gives these incentives for affordable housing. Well, first of all, what is affordable? Anywhere from $900 to $1,200 a month is not so affordable. And these are rents.
Oh, and I agree with you. And I want to continue on that point, but we need to take a very, very quick break here just to do a brief station identification, and we'll let you continue on with that. You are listening to KGNU Community Radio Public Affairs. Today, we're talking about regentrification in the Denver community as well as the state of Colorado. We have our in-state, our in-studio guest, Mr. Larry Ambrose, who's a Denver activist. And we're here talking about the regentrification going on in Five Points, Central Denver, the West, and north portions of the city limits here. So, Larry, let's go ahead and pick up where we left off here about this development that's going on downtown on Blake Street.
So this is a massive new downtown. We'll have consequences in the surrounding neighborhoods. We'll undoubtedly gentrify and displace people. But there's been no study done to say to what extent that's going to occur. Yet at the same time, you say, well, we're going to build affordable housing, but we don't know if the affordable housing that's going to be built is adequate for the people who are going to be displaced because they can't tell us that. They can't say, okay, there are going to be 2,000 people displaced and we're going to provide 2,000 units. And if they even do provide 2,000 units, they're going to be rental units. People who may have home ownership or who may aspire to have home ownership don't have the opportunity for that.
Absolutely. And so when they say affordable housing, now, is this retroactive to what the current tenants or current citizens or homeowners are paying that have been in those neighborhoods for the last 10, 20, 30 years? Or is it accelerated at today's rate of what's considered to be affordable?
Well, that's completely unknown. I mean, they can't tell you that. And in addition to that, think about this. They're going to be providing incentives to developers to build affordable housing. So who is going to benefit from this? The developers.
Absolutely.
They're going to get subsidies, and we're creating a new landlord class who are going to get subsidized to rent to the people who can't afford market-rate housing. So it's actually lining the pockets of the cronies and friends of the politicians today to build affordable housing. We don't have programs. Denver Urban Renewal Authority, it's all so complicated, but Denver Urban Renewal Authority, it's urban renewal, right? We're supposed to renew our city. Well, they give subsidies to developers. They don't give subsidies. They're supposed to, or they used to give considerable home improvement loans. We should have revolving loan funds that can help people get mortgages, that can help people with rents, not just the developers. And so that the function of Denver Urban Renewal Authority needs to be explored. But before we can do anything, we need to do these studies. We need to be able to say, okay, we're putting in a new downtown. It's going to displace 10,000 people. And in order to be fair to the people who live in Denver, we need to provide 10,000 units of affordable housing for the impact of this new development. That's what Mr. Brooks is proposing, yet there's absolutely no work, no studies to do that.
Absolutely. And do you think, based on what we've discussed, that's intentional? Because it appears to be that way, that, you know, the less details that are provided up front, the more that we have to be accountable for that on the backside to the citizens who are already occupying these units, who will soon be displaced.
You know, I can't say it's intentional. If you look at the mayors and Albus Brooks and these council people's campaign contributors, developer, 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 it either is, I mean, as I said, Brooks said nothing about the word zoning and his proposal in all of this discussion. So is he basically oblivious? I would say whether it's whether it's intentional or oblivion, or it's negligence, it's not something that we should be accepting.
Understood. And, you know, I definitely do not want to put words in people's mouths or speak haphazardly or be irresponsible with misappropriating opinions. The only observation I'm making is that there's a trend. And when you have developers who are in place, who are getting green-lighted by local government, what happens is once those developments are in place, then you have businesses like Ink Coffee and other places that are augmented from that. So they've gotten permission to, you know, add on and spider out from those developments based on the regentrification route that was started with those new facilities. And so I guess what I'm saying, Larry, is that if you don't know, either you're not paying attention or you are omitting the information. That's my observation.
I'll go a step further and say I believe that our culture of development in Denver is corrupt.
Okay.
Now, whether this corruption is direct payments under the table or whether it's through campaign contributions, but the culture that we have developed in Denver of unbridled growth,
okay,
of allowing this development, this pro-growth at any cost, without study, without concern about the people who are living here now, at the expense of the people who are living here now, is absolutely negligent if it's not intentional.
Okay.
Look at the Amazon proposal. I mean, did they ask us if we want Amazon to come here with 50,000 high-paying jobs? What do you think the gentrification impact of that's going to be?
It's going to be pretty massive.
Let me give you a little story. So we have a piece of land down here in the Central Platte Valley where Elitch's is located, the amusement park. Elitch's has gone broke 3 times. It will go broke again. It doesn't make money. It can only operate 6 months out of the year. Well, one of the sites that the city and the state have proposed for Amazon is the Elitch's site. They want to take out Elitch's and put in Amazon there. I think, when was it, about 10 years ago, I had a proposal to create a festival park in downtown Denver at the Elitch's site. And I went to Mayor Hickenlooper, and I gave him an example of what we'd done at the Auraria campus. I worked at Auraria for 14 years. And when we created the Tivoli, when we saved the Tivoli building, it was a developer named Trizek who came in, and they put in a shopping center that we kind of understood would probably not be successful. But we said, wow, if they don't succeed, then we can take that Tivoli shopping center and turn it into the sexiest student center in the country.
Okay.
And we bought back the Tivoli for pennies on the dollar, and that's exactly what happened. So I gave that example to Hickenlooper. And I said, look, you've got that same kind of situation with Elitch's. The city put $60 million into that site. And we can take that and make this an amenity in the public interest, for the public good, because we're talking about the lack of space for events. Hickenlooper was commercializing our parts. This is endemic of the kind of disrespect and lack of concern for the public and our quality of life endeavor to commercialize our parks. So this was a solution to that. And you know what he told me? Oh, that land is too valuable for development. And I said to him, Mr. Mayor, that land is only as valuable as you zone it. If you want to keep it at open space. We can keep the Ferris wheel. We can keep the merry-go-round. We can turn this into a wonderful amenity for Denver. So that's kind of where I think there's all kinds of these things are interrelated. I-70, I think Albus Brooks was talking about, oh, we're piling on all these unrelated issues to gentrification. They're all completely related. They show a lack of respect for the public interest first, and instead we cater and exactly to every development interest that comes along.
Wow. Well, Larry, guess what? We have a question from a listener.
Okay. I'm game.
All right. Awesome. Okay. We have a question from a listener calling from Fort Collins. She was at a city council meeting last week with a discussion about allocating more city funds to a business district. The city council scoffed at concerns about regentrification that were brought up by the listeners and others at the meeting. So, again, same kind of response. So, well, can you comment on that?
I'm not quite clear about what the particular situation was. It's a business district that was asking for funds.
It looks like they were engaged in a discussion with the city council up in Fort Collins.
Oh, in Fort Collins.
In Fort Collins about allocating more city funds to a business district, and the city council scoffed at the concerns about the regentrification. You know, about expanding and renewing this business district. So it sounds like a lot of what's going on here, and the listener wanted to know your comments about their situation in Fort Collins.
Well, I imagine that Denver is not alone in ignoring the growth. We are, after all, a capitalistic society which values entrepreneurship and making money, and I think that's a good thing. But there's at some point the public interest has to outweigh the profit motive. And that's the same thing with affordable housing. I mean, this affordable housing, everything is driven by profits. And at some point, what government is supposed to do, what our elected leaders are supposed to do is say, hey, first of all, we have to protect the public interest. And somewhere we've lost our way. It's not just a question of displacement and gentrification. We've created degradation and ruination of our neighborhoods. We have destroyed not only our neighborhoods, but the social fabric of our neighborhoods. At what point do we draw the line and say, this has to stop? I think we draw the line now, and we say, no more major rezonings. No more rezonings without first determining the intended consequences and the unintended consequences. And then once we know that information, I mean, this is the way we go about solving problems. We can't solve problems until we understand what's going on. So first we understand what's going to happen, and then we develop programs and strategies to deal with that, whether it's revolving loan funds, whether it's subsidies, whether it is developing areas where growth can occur. One of the things that happens with development and is they say, well, it's supply and demand. We can't control that. We created this zoning code to create more density in Denver. The mastermind behind that zoning code was a fellow by the name of Brad Buchanan. He was the head of the planning board. He's now our planning executive director for the city and county of Denver. He is an architect. He was not only literally the architect of the zoning code, had a lot to do with it, but he is an architect, and he lives in Bennett. He raises Angus cattle and drives into Denver every day and tells us how much density we need. This is what is going on in our city today. They did that entire zoning code for increasing the density in neighborhoods without consequential infrastructure planning. When you increase the size of the city, you need to say, okay, how much more do we need in roads? How much more do we need in sewers? How many schools? How many firehouses? We take tax increment financing and give it to the developers so we don't have the money to build the fire stations and the police stations. And we're feeling that today.
Absolutely. And We were discussing off air about slowing down this process and doing a better job of relitigating, like you said, the intended and unintended consequences of development. And we were speaking about or talking about a moratorium period about developing. Can you expand on that?
Well, as I said, I think it's time to say no more until we know what's going to happen as a result of these developments. I think Councilman Brooks's development at 38th and Blake is a good example of that. I don't think people understand the scale and the size of that development and what it's going to mean. There have been no studies done. I asked the planning office, I said, well, you're touting the fact that you're going to be getting these affordable housing incentives. Can you tell me what the impact of this development is going to be on displacement, as opposed to how many affordable housing units you're going to create? Well, that would be impossible to do. Why do we have a planning office, and why do we have experts whose job is to figure this stuff out if they say it's impossible to do? It is not impossible to do.
And that is a great question to end our show on. If we have planning and development, why is it there more transparency into zoning and planning and having the lives of millions of citizens in the hands of a board full of governmental officials and private developers? We need to make sure that we continue to educate ourselves and stay engaged in this process. And Larry, you have brought a lot of just phenomenal information with us this morning, and you have been a wealth of knowledge. So we are so honored to have you here today.
Oh, thank you so much.
Absolutely. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to wrap up our show today. And I just want to once again thank you all for listening to KGNU Community Radio Public Affairs. We have had our wonderful in-studio guest, Larry Ambrose, local Denver activist. And Larry, if people want to get in touch with you just about anything that's going on with the city, do you have any sites or any thing they could look up on their own to get involved?
Well, I think obviously most people know about, but in case you don't, Ditch the Ditch, Denver Fugly are two wonderful Facebook pages that you can interact on. And I think that's a good way to go. If you have questions of me, my email is lda@earthnet.net. Not Earthlink, but earthnet.net.
Okay, very.
LDA, like Larry David Ambrose.
Awesome. Larry, again, thank you for being in the studio this morning with us, and thank you for taking the time to share these wonderful thoughts and ideas with us. Again, thank you all for listening to KGNU Community Radio. I am your host, Tish Buford. Stay engaged, stay educated, and always stay ready. Have a great day, and thank you for listening.